So when I teach class, usually what ends up happening is I can't ever. David calls me up and says, "Gary, you can teach whatever you want." That's like the worst subject to be assigned, isn't it? Because then you cannot, for the life of you, figure out what you want to talk about. I'd rather them say, "I need you to discuss Colossians chapter 2, verse 3." Then at least I got something to start with. So, you know, I worry about it for 2 weeks, and then I stumble and everything. And basically what ends up happening every time David does this is I end up taking something that's going on in my life and teaching a class about it. So, fortunately or unfortunately for you, what's going on in my job right now is our year end. And I may have taught something like this a couple years ago. I kind of had memory of doing this. My year end's going on, and we've just finished goal setting. And goal setting is a real exciting time if you're in the professional world. You have to sit down and figure out all these different things about, you know, what you've done in the last year. Where do you want to go in the next year? Where do you want to go in your career? And one thing that I stress a lot with the people who report to me is doing a really strong self-evaluation. Not just of, you know, how did I perform compared to my goals last year, but who am I really and what are my strengths and my skills? And then asking yourself the question, well, where am I today? You know, who am I today? Where am I today? And once you feel like you've got a good answer to that question, I ask them to say, where do you want to be in 5 years? And they, you know, well, my job, you know, if you're a staff person, you want to be a manager. If you're a manager, you want to be a director. If you're a director, you want to be a partner. Now, those are pretty easy answers. Pretty similar to if I were to say, as a Christian, where do you want to be? The easy answer is, well, I want to be in heaven. And that's a great, perfect answer. I mean, that's where you want to be, right? But then the question I go back to them is if you're here today and you, this is honestly where you are, and you know that you want to be over here in 5 years, the question that you have to ask is, do you know how to get there? Do you know what you need to do to make sure that you get to where you want to be? Because what I've discovered is that that question has to be answered from two perspectives. It has to be answered from your own personal perspective. I know what I need to do. I think I know what I need to do to achieve a goal. And in the sense where I have employees who work for me, they need to look at me and say, I think I know what Gary expects from me in order to get to that goal in 5 years. And if those two expectations don't line up, one of us is going to be disappointed. Probably not me. Probably them. So this is a process we've been going on for the last couple months, and it's very interesting, and actually I think it's a really good process, because as you lay it out, you start to realize that setting big goals is easy, and saying I want to accomplish great things are great, but there's a disconnect between accomplishing great things and actually desiring to accomplish great things and actually accomplishing them. And what I have found, and I'm going to wrap, this is all going to get right back to this lesson here, I promise this. This is taking a second, but I promise it's going to get back here, and hopefully you'll enjoy it. Hopefully you'll agree with me at least. What I found is that if we're not careful about knowing what we're supposed to do tomorrow, we'll never get to where we know we're going to be in 5 years. And that it's not having a goal that's 5 years in the future. That's not bad. You have to have that. You've got to have a big goal. But you got to have little goals too. You got to have action steps to get to the big goals, and they need to be actionable. And I thought about, as I was struggling the last, you know, week or so trying to come up with a good topic, I started thinking about living the life of a Christian. And, you know, most of us in here, if not all of us, know what it takes. I was going to do PowerPoint slides, but then I got lazy and I didn't do them. So just imagine Imagine this. There's this circle that all they, and that circle is the church, and you're outside, and your little dot's outside the church, and we have this arrow. Here's how you get inside the church, right? You've seen those, and you get inside the church, and that's a good thing. And there, you know, there's a plan of salvation between you and your dot, which is outside the church, and the big circle, which is the church. And so you got the plan of salvation. We know how to get there. And then from there, our goal is to get to heaven. And I have a question I ask a lot of people when I'm doing goal setting. It's, and what then? You know, it's like that Coke Zero commercial. Have you seen it where the guy, he gets something, he goes, and they give him something extra? I think that's where we are as Christians sometimes, is we need to, we get in the church and we have excitement and we have this goal to get to heaven. And we need to make sure we're moving that direction on a continual basis. And so as I went through this process, I started thinking about what does it take to get, if I know where I want to go, what does it take me to get from where I am to where I want to be? In anything. And the word I came back to is, on a big scale, is the word growth. When I counsel my employees, I have a lady in Miami who, a very talented lady who wants to be a partner, and she's struggling. And I say, Lourdes, did you turn the light back up on me? See, I knew he did it. I could feel it as soon as I walked back over here. I said, Lourdes, you've got these issues you have to work on, and you have to grow in your ability to do this, this, and this. And if you don't grow, if you don't make an effort to grow in these areas, you're not going to accomplish your goal. And do we all understand that concept at work? You know, we really do. We really understand the fact that if we continue to do the same thing, we can't expect to get promoted. We can't expect to get big raises. We can't expect for our bosses to say, hey, you know, on a scale of 1 to 5, with 5 being the top, you're a 5. They're not going to tell you that. They're going to say, you know what? You're good. You're doing what you're supposed to do. You're a 3. Which may not be a bad thing. That may be what we are. You know, that's okay. I have employees who worked at my firm for 20 years who are good, solid 3s, and they work hard and they do great jobs, but they're never getting promoted. That's where they're going to be the rest of their life. And so I think about my journey as a Christian, and I don't want to be a 3. Because I think as a Christian, we're failing. And I think we understand the concept in secular life, and I think if we talk about it in our role as a Christian, we'll all say that we understand it and believe it, but I don't know if we act on it. Dirk. Absolutely. And you're actually touching on my first point, which I'm going to get to in about 2 minutes. So, hold up. No. Let's apply this to our spiritual life. Without question, let's just real quick look at Ephesians chapter 4. Ephesians chapter 4, verse 14 says, as a result, we are no longer to be children, tossed here and there by waves and carried about by every wind of doctrine, by the trickery of man, by craftiness and deceitful scheming. But speaking the truth in love, we are to grow up in all aspects into Him who is the head, even Christ. The same type of concept is discussed in 2 Peter. You know, the church in Thessalonica was, you know, they grew exceedingly in faith. And Paul prayed for the church at Philippi, the Philippians. You know, he praised them for the fact that their love was abounding and growing. It's without doubt that there is a biblical concept of growth, of personal growth, that we're responsible for. And so I think, you know, from my perspective, applying this idea that I understand and grasp very well in my work to my Christian life, it has some validity. So what does it take to grow? Now, Dirk's already kind of touched on the first one, but I'm going to talk about four different items, if I have enough time. So I'm going to tell you all four of them. So in case I don't have enough time, you might, and this way Dirk can hold his comments till the appropriate point. And these are I actually found an outline I liked a lot, but these were what is kind of funny when I was laying out my note for what I talked to my staff about. These are kind of the exact same things I talked about them. First thing it takes to grow is a strong desire to want to grow. Those people I have who have been threes their entire career, they do not desire to grow. It's a choice they have made. In order to grow, to meet our need to get from point A to point B as Christians, we have to desire to grow. The second thing it takes is the appropriate learning. And, you know, in my job, that's I send people to training. I give them specific jobs so they can learn new skill sets. I put them down with people who have experience doing whatever it is I might need them to do. And I help them learn as Christians. We've got We've got a nice little CPE manual. That's Continuing Professional Education manual here that we can refer to whenever we need. It's got most of the answers. In fact, I think Jerry has all the answers, right? Has all the answers that we need to live godly. And we've got a whole bunch of people who can help train us, right? That's you guys. Third, growth takes practice. You got to work at it. You do not grow overnight. I'm trying to think of someone, an analogy, but I'm drawing a blank. Michael Jordan did not wake up one morning and become a great basketball player, did he? Michael Jordan spent unbelievable hours outside, wherever he was. I guess, did he grow up in North Carolina? Is that where he's from? North Carolina. Out there, probably in the winter, sitting there shooting free throws, right? Hopefully not just free throws, hopefully everything. You know, those little dunks and all that stuff, whatever it is that I can never relate with because I can't jump at all. So, practice. Well, what does that mean as a Christian? Growth, practice. We'll talk a little bit about that. And finally, I think growth takes time. And this is always a big one for my staff. It's amazing. Y'all get a new kid out of college and hire them, and 3 years, you know, 3 months later, they're ready to be promoted, get a raise, be put in charge of people. I'm like, no. Patience, time. Growth takes both of those things. So you have to have a desire, you got to want to learn, you got to practice at it, and you've got to be willing to give yourself some time and have some patience for that growth to take place. Because we don't become perfect at anything overnight. It takes time. So let's talk about those things. A desire to want to grow, and Dirk already touched on this a little bit with his first comment. That's one of the biggest things that you have to have. It's a game ender if you don't desire to grow. I don't know of anyone who's ever accomplished anything great. Well, there are people who've accomplished great things by total accident, but that would be a rarity, right? One thing I'm sure you can't accomplish by accident is getting to heaven. So you have to have a desire to grow. I tell my staff, I said, one thing you've got to do is take control of your career. It's your career. And I would say the same thing to all of us as Christians. You have to take control of your personal Christianity. Your desire to grow, it has to come from you. I could be the greatest orator in the world and say all kinds of great words, and none of them will cause you to grow. Well, they could help you grow, but it's if you don't have a desire to sit there and listen and to participate, there'll be no growth. Let's look at a couple things. Let me say, we really understand this too. How many of you have had kids? That's all most of us, right? That's a lot of us. So remember when they were little? And they just wanted to do everything. Do you remember that? And it was consuming, you know? And they would try to stand up and they would fall over and they would just get right back. Now, after they cried, if you looked at them, if you looked away, you know, they didn't cry. But they would just continually, and they wanted to grow. And as they get a little bit older, they wanted to, you know, they'd walk around the house with your shoes on. you know, they'd want to be like you. See, I think that's a desire to grow. That we, as children, when we first start our Christian life, should have. And that's the type of desire that we need to make sure we don't lose. So look at 1 Peter chapter 2, verse 2. That light is hot, too, by the way. Therefore, I'm starting in verse 1. Therefore, putting aside all malice and all deceit and hypocrisy and envy and slander, like newborn babies, long for the pure milk of the word, so that by it you may grow in respect to salvation, if you have tasted the kindness of the Lord. Tell me, is that a command that we should desire to grow? It's pretty strong instruction, isn't it? Like children, desire the milk of the word so that you can grow. And as Christians, we fundamentally have to have that desire. Because if not, we'll fall away from growth. And you know, it's interesting when, and some of you in here have been Christians for, I don't know, I guess 60 plus years. And in here probably some of you have been Christians for under 5 years. And we'll talk about the 60 plus year Christians in a second, but the under 5 year Christians, do you remember the passion you had when you were first baptized? When you first put on the Lord in baptism? You're like a child then. You wanted everything you could get. And somewhere along the line, I wonder if we don't have trouble keeping that desire there. You know, you know, children are funny like that as adults. I mean, well, I think we're the same. We don't admit it to ourselves. We want something really bad. We get it. For the first 2 or 3 weeks, we play with it a lot. New golf club, new car, whatever it might be. I don't know what people desire these days. You get it. You play with it a lot. Just like the kids on Christmas, right? They get their toy. They play with them for 4 or 5 hours, and then they're back sitting down watching the television because they're done with their toys. They're bored with them already. And we have an issue. We sometimes do that. And if you don't grow, if you don't continue to desire to grow, there's a problem with, I think that leads to a problem. And so our 60 plus year Christians, do we ever, I mean, and you don't know who has to answer verbally, but do you think we ever reach a point where we become self-satisfied with where we are? You know, I've been going to church since I was born. You know, I mean, that's a long time. And I've been going 45 years. Next month, 45 years. I probably know it all by now. I think I got it all down pat. What?
I said, Jackie, is that true?
Can you see getting that attitude after a while? You know, that hey, I've got it all down pat. I don't need to have that that desire to grow anymore, because I'm pretty good where I am. You know, I'm good. You know, that happened to me at my job once. I think I've told you guys this story before, where I almost got fired because I thought I was doing really good and found out I wasn't. you know, you learn a lot when things like that happen. And if we become satisfied with where we are, I don't care if you've been a Christian 1 year, or 10 or 15 or 60, and you don't have a desire to grow, I think you put yourself at risk. Let's look at Philippians chapter 3, verse 12, starting with verse 12. This is Paul. And let's just, you know, Paul's the guy, right? He's the man. You know, it'd be tough for any of us to say Paul didn't lay it all out there for Christ, right? And if anyone could sit back and go, "I'm good," Paul could have been one of those guys. But look what Paul says. Not that I have already obtained it or have already become perfect, but I press on so that I may lay hold of that for which also I was laid, for that which also I was laid hold of by Christ Jesus. Brethren, I do not regard myself as having laid hold of it yet, but one thing I do, forgetting what lies behind and reaching forward to what lies ahead, I press on towards the goal for the prize of the upward call of Christ, of God in Christ Jesus. Paul, even through all that he did, never was satisfied with where he was as a Christian. He knew he had to keep working. He had a desire to keep growing as a Christian, even throughout all that he'd gone through. And I worry about some Christians and myself a lot, reaching a point where, you know, you get distracted and your desire to continue to grow as a Christian. But just like for my employees who want to get promoted, you know, I don't care if you've been working for me 20 years and you want to be a partner, if you've been working for me for 2 years and want to be a senior, you've got a desire to grow. If you don't, you're not going to get to the next level. And as Christians, I don't care if you've been a Christian for 5 years, I don't care if you've been a Christian for 10, for 50, or for 60, or if you're Paul the Apostle, if you lose your desire to grow, you're going to struggle to get to the next level. And going back to what I said before, when you're trying to please not just yourself, but trying to please someone who at the end of the day makes a decision about whether or not you accomplished what they asked you to accomplish, you need to look to that person and say, am I meeting their expectations? And I think it's quite obvious that the scriptures teach us we've got to have a desire to grow. So we have to have a desire. We also have to learn. We have to feed ourselves. And this one's quite obvious to me. It is shocking to me how little... when I started out in my career, you know, you work tons of hours, but then every night you'd take home books and articles and you'd read and you would learn so I could become a better tax professional. That's what I had to do. You remember that stuff, Jim? You were an auditor, though, right? But you had to, I mean, you didn't, it wasn't just at the job. You took it home and you learned. And you just, and all of us have done that. We wanted to accomplish something. I get my staff in these days, these new kids out of school, brilliant kids. I mean, the competition to get into the state universities these days is something else. So these kids are really smart. And they come out, and then they work, and then they go home. And I'm like, what is wrong with today's world that these people don't do what I did? I know what the world's changed. But they don't have this desire to fill their heads with tax. And I know maybe none of you have your desire to fill your heads with tax, but that's what we do. We're tax people. So you have to fill your head with it so you learn. Don't laugh at me. I do visit the Joint Committee on Taxation website on a daily basis just to read articles because they're fun. That's another discussion, which I'd be happy to have with you sometime. We just read 1 Peter chapter 2, too. It says, as newborn babes desire the pure milk of the word that you may grow. We just read that. And think about go back to my people. I want them to learn. I want them to grow. I want them to feed them with something they've got to have. And if they don't get that, they don't have the desire, and they don't get they have the desire, but they don't get the right information, they'll never grow. And part of that's my fault, right? As their boss, if I don't give them the ability to the right information to learn, you know, if I say, okay, I need you to learn these three things, but I don't give you the opportunity to learn it, I don't give you the information, so we don't have that issue as Christians because we've been given the information we need. You know, we've been given... We've been given a command that we need to not just desire to grow, but make an effort to learn. Matthew says that we should not live by bread alone, but by every word that proceeds from the mouth of God. So now that's giving us direction, right? So when I tell my employees, if I want you to get, you want to get a raise, you want to get promoted, here's the 8 different articles I need you to read, and I need you to do this, and I need you to take this class. Now see, God has now given us a direction to work towards, toward knowledge. So let's think about it. What do we need to do to get this? Now, this is why I'm going to stop talking for a second and tell you, how do we learn as Christians? These are not hard, by the way. These are really easy questions. Study the Word. Now, is there a verse anywhere that talks about that? Oh, you can just pick one of the many. Go ahead. Fire away. There is a verse that says that. And there you go. 2 Timothy 2:15. Someone want to read that for me real quick, out loud? It's a heat lamp, too. Yeah, I mean, that's pretty much the one thing you've got to do, right? I mean, this isn't rocket science here. And when I tell my staff, here's what you've got to do. It's not rocket science. I'm not writing something that makes me a genius. I'm saying learn. So we have a scriptural mandate to learn as Christians. So if we want to grow, we must learn. Trace E. Yeah, Psalms, I was going to mention Psalms chapter 1, verses 1 and 2. Meditate on God's Word day and night. I mean, that's where we're asking to be. There's some benefits of that, too. The church at Berea, they were able to determine what was truth when truth was taught because what did they do? They searched the Scriptures daily. You know, there's obviously a mandate to learn, to study, you know, and to practice. Another area, and I mentioned this before, and we're going to talk about practice in a second, but I mentioned before that when time comes to learn, part of learning is being with people who can teach you. And there's lots of opportunities to be with people who can teach you. And if you think that being here on Sunday mornings is all you need, I'm not you. I won't make your decisions for you. But it's hard to learn when you don't surround you with people who are experts. You know, if I've got some very technical areas that I'm an expert on, but I'm not the smartest guy. I know people who know more than me. And when I want to learn, I don't go to introduction classes. I don't go to intermediate classes. I go to advanced classes because I need people who have done this longer than me, spent more time doing it than I have, who have a different perspective on it than I do, to teach me. Because there's a lot. We can learn all we need to know from the Scriptures. Sometimes we need help applying it to our lives. To applying it to day-to-day situations, to making sure that we're not substituting our logic and our will for God's, because there's a possibility we can do that. Because we get we as humans get pretty big-headed every once in a while. I don't know if you've noticed that or not. My wife tells me that happens to me quite often, but she's probably right. So here we have this opportunity to be here, and not just here. You know, you choose who you go to dinner with on Friday night. You choose who you're hanging out with on the weekends. Those are all choices you make. And you can choose to be with whoever you want. My favorite verse in the Bible, and, you know, we always tell it to the teens, and it's not, I don't think the verse says, hey, teenagers. I think it says, be not deceived. I don't think it says, teenagers, don't be deceived. I don't think it says, elementary school kids, don't be deceived. I think it just says, don't be deceived. Evil companions corrupt good morals. Don't be deceived. That's talking to you and to me. I don't care if you're 18 or 88. It's talking to you and me. Don't be deceived. And we can choose who we spend our time with. We can choose what those people can teach us. And if we choose to be with people who teach us things that are not righteous, that's a mistake. Especially if we're giving up opportunities to be with people who can teach us. Now, I'm in no way saying you shouldn't have friends outside the church. I'm saying you need to balance your life. You need to make sure you're with people who can teach you so that you see and you're not deceived. Because we don't want to be deceived. We don't want to see when we're being influenced by other people and that we're not influencing them. So it takes a desire, and it takes learning. It takes practice. How many of you have ever been good at something the very first time you did it? I've always been good at eating. I'm really good at that. Anybody been really good at something the first time they did it? Yeah, see, that doesn't happen very much, does it? In fact, I don't know anybody's, you know, even people you say, well, they're just a natural. You know, the first time they did it, they're better than we are, but they weren't a natural the first time they did it. They just, you know, they have better physical skills, they've got better mental skills. There's always someone who's got something better than you. You know, I used to say, unless you're Michael Jordan, there's always someone better than you at something. But, you know, now he's old. He's not old. He's like my age. So he's not old. Actually, I think he's older than me. Yeah, he's older than me. But there's now someone better than him, right? He's not the best basketball player in the world. He's definitely not the best general manager in the world. So, you know, eventually, you know, we all thought Tiger Woods was the best. And now there's people better than Tiger right now, right? So eventually there's someone better than you. So you're not good at something the first time you do it. You've got to practice doing it. Hebrews chapter 5, verse 14. We'll start in verse 13. For everyone who partakes only of milk is not accustomed to the word of righteousness, for he is an infant. Someone obviously needs to grow. But solid food is for the mature, who because of practice, and I emphasize that word because that's the word I'm using, who because of practice have their senses trained to discern good and evil. So this is actually a biblical concept here. 1 Timothy 4 talks about exercising yourself towards godliness. Right? This is a biblical concept. You can't sit in a vacuum and learn how to be godly. If you want to grow, you've got to practice being godly. You've got to do something. I think I taught that class last year or the year before, is that Christianity is an action religion. It's not a passive religion. And if you think you're going to get to heaven by sitting in a pew, you really need to search the Scriptures. Because there are so many commands that tell you to go to do. And if you're not going and doing, you need to think about it. You need to examine yourself. You know, he that doeth the will of my Father who is in heaven. Do is an action verb. And doing is practice. When you practice doing something, you get better at it. Jackie and I were talking about, I forget what we were talking about the other day, and I said, well, Jackie and I started a new workout program. We're going to get in shape. CrossFit IQ, it's called, and it's the devil, is what it is. And I found out something about myself, is I don't like not being able to do things. And I've known this my whole life. I'd get a video game when I was a kid, and if I couldn't beat the video game pretty quick, I would quit it. I wouldn't do it. Because I didn't like not being good at something. I don't know if that's just if that's a Gary thing, or if that's a man thing, or if that's just I'm a psychological freak type of thing. That's okay. I can handle that. I'm pretty good. I've done that. I talked about self-analysis when you started. I've done that a lot. I am a little bit crazy, and I'm okay with that. But so we started this new workout thing. And I went down there and I found out I was terrified of looking inadequate when I first went down there. Now, I will tell you, we've done three workouts and it's a timed thing and Jackie's beat me twice. So she's pretty proud of herself. She gloats a little bit. She's kind of kind to me. She gives me, oh, you're doing good, honey. And then she's laughing behind my back. I know it. She's killing me. But I am going back because she encourages me. But this actually has a point. We, and if anyone else is like me, you know, there's a fear of failure, right? Some of us have a very strong fear of failure. Some of us have a very strong fear of embarrassment. That's mine. I do not like, I like to control my embarrassment. I'm willing to act like an idiot in front of people as long as I control that. That's me controlling my own personal embarrassment. And that may be, you know, psychologically, that may be why I act like an idiot in front of people sometime, because then I create the situation by which the embarrassment, and no one else can give it to me. So I control that. But I have a strong fear of being embarrassed, right? Fear of rejection. That's a strong one for a lot of people, right? And, I never asked a girl out who I didn't know was going to say yes before I asked her, because I have a strong, even my wife, I knew she was going to say yes before I asked her, because I checked around with her friends, right? So I've never had a girl say no to me. That's not really a lot to brag about, I guess. So we have all these fears, and fear stops us from doing things, doesn't it? And I'm not validating anyone's fear, because my fears I just told you about personally, those are true. I mean, you don't know how tough it was for me to go down to CrossFit IQ and, you know, in this class of 30 people, be the last guy to finish by 10 minutes, you know. I mean, I was so far at the back, it's tough. But you know how you know what you do to overcome it? I've been 3 times now, and I'm not as embarrassed now, because that's just who I am. How do you overcome fear sometimes? How do you overcome your inability to do things? You just do it a little bit. When I talked about goal setting, it's just little small steps. And this is the part of Christianity where we need to set small steps for ourselves. Because, you know, we struggle sometimes getting people to teach classes. And why do we have trouble getting people to teach classes? Well, there's 2 reasons. 1, people are afraid to teach classes. Or 2, people don't feel like they've got the knowledge to teach classes. 2 very valid reasons. But if you never do anything about those 2 things, whether it be the cradle roll class or the auditorium class, if you never do anything about it, if you never change what you're doing in order to be able to do something like that, then you're not growing. And it's never going to change. You're going to be the same person sitting in the same seat next year as you are this year. Because you're not, and it doesn't have to be teaching a class. There's got to be something as a Christian that we do that your fear is sometimes paralyzing you from doing. And if you don't do something different, if you don't grasp that desire to grow and say, I am going to do something, and you're going to be sitting in the same pew doing the same thing next year, and if you're not growing, you're dying. Dirk. And that's exactly what it is, Dirk. It's, and to go back to that, you know, 5-year goal, when I started this conversation, 5-year goal is tough. How am I going to get something in 5 years? And a lot of our minds don't work that way. And if you're telling someone who's struggling, whether it's yourself trying to do something new as a Christian, or a friend of yours, this is what you have to do, and it's out there, they'll never get there because it's too big of a step. And when babies started walking, they didn't take big steps and run down the hallway. They took that first little step, you know, you held the pencils, they held the couch, whatever it was, and they took those first little steps, 1 little step at a time. That's how you get something accomplished, by doing something. And if it's 1 thing a day, then you do it. And then, and we'll kind of switch right from practice into patience and time. Accept failure. You're not going to be good at it your first time. You know, you're going to struggle with whatever it is. You're going to volunteer to teach, and you're going to get up there, and you're going to go blank. It happens. I go blank about 30 times a class when I'm standing up here. You just keep talking. And someone, you know, there's people, when I first started teaching, my favorite man in the world was Bill Powell. Loved the man to death because he came, I don't know if he did it on purpose or not, but every time I taught, Bill Powell came into my class. And any time I struggled, Bill Powell opened his mouth and made a comment. You know, not to make me look stupid. And I don't even know if he did it on purpose, but I always felt like he did. But to make sure I got through the class. And there's people like that in here right now. Dirk will always say something to you. He's always got something. Jerry Pittman's good. I mean, I know people I can say something and it'll get them to respond to me. And I know they're in here. And if you want to teach, if you whatever you want to do, there's people in this congregation who are going to have your back the whole time. So when you fail, and you will, you'll make mistakes. No one's ever been perfect the right thing at the first time you've done something. All of us have sinned. That's why we're at church, because we've all sinned at some point in our life. And, we all still struggle with sin, because if not, life would be easy. But patience, so you practice it. And then you'd be willing to accept failure every once in a while. And I think we struggle with that sometimes, that we're not willing to take those setbacks that they come. And the first time you talk to your neighbor about coming to church, if that's what you want to do, that's what I'm going to practice. I'm going to work on inviting people to church. More people are going to say no than are going to say yes. It's not rejection of you, but you got to learn to deal with it, because it does feel like they're rejecting you. You got to get over that. You got to work on it, and you got to take time. But you can't quit. And that's let's see if I got this one last verse here. James chapter 1, 4. Let endurance have its perfect result, so that you may be perfect and complete, lacking in nothing. I just use this verse as a concept of, we've got to be willing to put in the time it takes to grow. We've got to have a desire, we have to learn, we have to practice it, and we've got to have patience as we grow. Because you don't become a partner in an accounting firm in 2 years, and you don't get to heaven in two. I asked the members in here who've been Christians 60 years. Sometimes it takes 60 or 70 years to get to heaven, and you've got to grow the entire time. That's all I've got. Thank you for your attention.